Hello, everyone. I'm glad you're able to tune into this episode of Unmuted Generations. I'm Ryan Mew, and as always, in each episode, we focus on expanding our horizons and personal knowledge of the world to cultivate a happy and healthy lifestyle. My guest this week is none other than Angela Luong, a creative entrepreneur, podcaster, and mental health advocate who is releasing a mobile app called Calm On in early February of this year to help children process their emotions through education, healthy habits, and engaging activities. Welcome, Angela. I'm glad to have you on today. And how's everything going?
Hi, I am excited to be part of this podcast. I have so many amazing things coming up for the app, and we've just been connecting to a lot of therapists and a lot of really cool experts who, you know, have been helping us out since June last year. So lots of good things are happening my way, working super hard and also getting to meet a lot of cool people along the way with like people like you too.
Well, I'm glad you think I'm cool. Most people think I'm lame, but I appreciate the compliment. And, you know, I'm just really glad to connect with you too, because I think a lot of people start out their conversations like, hey, what did you do in 2020? How's your 2020 going? You seem to make like the most of 2020. Like you did a lot and you created Calm On, which is more of like an innovative and timely app that's kind of taking a more scientific based approach and teaching children in like a fun activity filled way. So what's the story behind the name and really the story behind you creating this app in general?
Yeah, there is quite a little bit more on just what I've experienced as a kid. Personally, I didn't have many role models or people who could relate to the kind of internal things and conflicts that I deal with as a kid. Mental health was not something I knew until college. And I felt like I dealt with the most extreme emotional situations in my life when I was actually a lot younger compared to when I was in college. Though college had its own like set of like, you know, issues and responsibilities and all, I still feel like if I had to think back, you know, I dealt with more emotional issues when I was a kid and I didn't know how to handle it. I dealt with like bullying, which is something I felt like was a very low point in my life in elementary school. And I didn't have many friends either. And I thought, man, I wish I just have like an older sibling to talk to about like what I'm going through. So I always like think that I had to be on my own until like I grew up. And if the elementary school Angela saw my future up to this point, you know, she would be like, wow, you have so many friends. Like, you know, you're actually very loved.
And on top of that, like you're such, I could already tell right off the bat that you're a very loving and caring person and you put yourself out there for other people. And like when it comes to bullying and stuff, because I've experienced something similar to you in elementary and middle school. It's kind of this weird feeling of just like hopelessness. You know, it's like, oh man, is this going to be like every day, especially when you're so young? Like your brain is still developing. You're still trying to figure out like what the notion of the world is. Like, so do you feel like you didn't really have anybody to go to back then? Or was it one of those things where it was just kind of like internalized and you didn't really know how to comprehend it as much?
I think it's a little bit of both. I would say I didn't have an older sibling. I'm first generation. So first generation in college and in school. I guess like I always had this responsibility for my parents at least and family that like I would be able to go through like the emotions as a kid and just do well in school. Really, that was the focus for a lot of people at a young age. That was all we worried about. And, you know, I think some lucky ones will be able to have hobbies and such on the side, like creative arts and dancing and all that. But, you know, for me, it was more like I could have these hobbies on the side, like creative things and passions, which I really loved as a kid, lots of creative arts and everything. But I always just focused on school in the end. And to your second question about like just not having people to talk to and like not knowing how to internalize things, I think that was also something that I dealt with too, because I had all these emotional thoughts in my head and I would feel very sad. But I wouldn't know how to internalize it in a way where I would say, ah, like, you know, this, if you feel this way, then you should do this instead. Like, you know, having a system in place. Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a big thing nowadays. You know, 6% of the US population, they identify as like Asian American or Pacific Islander. And about 15% of that 6% reported having a mental illness or just like gone through some mental struggle, whether it's depression, anxiety, you know, maybe they're addicted to something. And a lot of it, people just stem like, oh, you know, they are older and they're kind of just a lost cause. But sometimes it's just because when they were growing up, they internalized their feelings and they weren't really taught how to push it out so much. You know, being from like a first generation family, was it different just, I guess, in the way you were raised compared to maybe, I don't know, like a second or third generation? Like, was there a bit of a culture gap at all that you experienced?
So I did have relatives that came over from my extended family side. And most of them are usually older than me. I think there's only one who is young, who's about like a year or two away from my actual age. And I think culturally, we would have similar values for like closer the age, and the people who are, even if they came from like, say, mainland China or Vietnam, we would still have maybe a couple things to relate to. One of them could actually speak English really well now after being in the US for maybe like only 6 to 7 or 10 years, like around that time.
Yeah.
So, but we would only have maybe, there's a certain point that we could connect from my relatives, I think, though. In the end, I think the culture is different. The pop culture is different. And things that we like and what we don't like is also very, very different. So it's hard to have some conversations about like just even the general things that we generally like to consume, which is like social media stuff and other things like that, and celebrities even to that point. I think, well, actually, K-pop is very popular internationally. So,
oh yeah, of course.
I think that's something I could connect with some of my relatives. Yeah. And even anime.
Even Korean dramas and anime now. Like, anime is all over pop culture. Korean dramas, like Netflix, is just making them one after another. I'm like, wow.
It's so crazy that there's such a big community. And you can make friends. It can be a very positive thing. And it's, when I was a kid, at least, it was a form of escapism where you can just go to, like, you know, something that is comforting. Like, if I didn't have anyone to talk to, I would indulge myself in these things like anime or manga, like comic books, you know?
No, I agree. And I think the cool part about it too is like, mm-hmm. at least with the animes that I've watched in the past, whether it's like One Piece or Naruto, or I don't know, a lot of the battle ones, like the character he starts off is more of like a weaker character, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then he grows, and then as the story progresses, he grows with it, gets stronger, and he fights, and eventually he becomes the hero. Whereas if you look at a lot of traditional American cartoons, let's just say like Fairly Odd Parents, Jimmy Neutron, SpongeBob, there's no level upsets. It's just like a story, and that's pretty much what it is. You just look at the story, and every episode is like a new story, but it doesn't follow a particular pattern. Like, sure, you're introduced to new characters, but there's no sense of growth or just like linearity at all.
Yeah, I agree. I think I watched a lot of action films for that reason, because there's always a character development, like Dragon Ball Z. Inuyasha was my favorite.
Oh, yes. That's a great one. That's a classic, too.
Yeah. You know? Everyone in the anime community has to know who, well, like that show. It's like
that's entering. Not even a shameless plug.
Right. You have to know the show before you can be part of the club. That's like literally like hazing of anime.
I agree. That was a great one. I watched that. I watched Yu Yu Hakusho. Just the typical ones that are kind of mainstream, but there's new ones coming out every year and they're all great, but the majority of them follow that character development path. Mm-hmm,
right.
There's multiple different routes. And I know, obviously, you went through your own set of issues where you felt that you were alone and that you may not have been able to relate to people as much, aside from other topics like anime or K-pop or or TV. But in this, if we're following a traditional anime path, where did your character develop really take off, and where did you start experiencing growth past that phase?
Oh, that's an interesting one. I think for me, if I were to be in an anime show, it would be one of those like slice of life kind of like genres. Because I don't live in a way like to the edge to a point where I would like bleed to death or like putting my life on the line every single day and have people chase after me.
It could be like a mentality, because like with me at least, like when I was growing up, I was very risk averse. And I think a lot of it was just that I was a lot very insecure in myself, and I didn't feel like I could relate to a lot of people because of the school environment. I was one of the only Asians in a primarily a school where there was one race was predominant. I had a great family life. My mom and dad were always encouraging me, and it wasn't until I think high school or maybe college to where they would always come to me and say, like, we know you could like do better than this. And I started gaining confidence when I got a job, and eventually like they were just very trustful in me. And that was when I stopped being so risk averse, and I started kind of believing what they've been saying this entire time, believing in my support system, regardless of how big or how small it was. And then really just started taking chances, and obviously, I wasn't putting my life on the line and fighting people in the streets or learning how to be a ninja, but just doing things like, oh, maybe I'll apply to this job. Maybe I'll try this way of talking to a customer. Maybe I'll join this organization on this. Like, where do you think the switch flipped for you?
Yeah, I have a couple questions to ask you after this, because you have a couple points. But I will also go ahead and do my little like anime sequence. Well, I think I was a very creative person growing up as a kid. So I would start in a very innocent, the storyline would be very innocent and very cute, where you would see a little girl, she has big dreams and she likes to play imaginary all the time and has her little inner world built already. So her inner world is usually a lot more attractive compared to the reality of things. Like her friends and her own friends, her own group of friends are very different in terms of treatment and just acceptance and comfort. And my kind of imaginary friends when I was a kid was like very magical. And I even have like pets and imaginary sisters and friends. So I would see the little anime me would have a really cool world. And I think kids could relate to that. We always like just did make believe with like house and things like that in the playground. And that would be a way to start. And then I would see like gradually in middle school, I think it was easier to make a few other friends who were very loyal and made me trust people and start talking to people more, just a little bit more comfortable with my own skin. But I still felt very small. And I think that would be a point where my confidence is slightly going higher compared to me when I was in elementary school. And I would be listening to music and just diving into all these different cultures and people. And I also had a huge middle school crush and high school crush on top of that. So then I would be following that love life storyline where there is a shy girl who's very timid and she doesn't know how to approach her crush and would just like stare at him every day in class.
Yeah, not creepy at all.
Right. But wouldn't even try to talk to him. So that would be a huge part of my anime like life. And then I still felt like my identity, I think back then, was still like, I'm still trying to get accepted, even within my small group of friends. And I still didn't know what to do with my life. And I still wanted to treat people right. Still being kind to people, even though I've been mistreated before in the past in elementary school, and just try to push that off. Always stuck very positively and And then I was also very into the online community too. So that was interesting. I think that allowed me to also talk to people more in a way to start networking or just meeting new friends and also starting connections and again, building bonds with people over time and also different cultures. Like by the end of eighth grade, I would say I was into K-pop very immensely. I was into dancing. I was into just the whole like K-pop scene at that point. And I wanted to be like those celebrities. And that whole form of like kind of like escapism into K-pop kind of emerged in that phase of my life, starting from eighth grade to like high school. That was my way of seeing the world more in a way. I try to integrate the beauty of K-pop, like the things, the aesthetics and things that I see there and the personalities and people and the community and try to merge that with reality so that I can see my life a lot more positively in a way, which is very interesting.
Is that escapism though? Because it really, I feel like it's just kind of a positive experience or something you're genuinely interested in. And you're just kind of like learning lessons from it. I mean, like that, because basketball, like I was very, very into basketball growing up. That was like my thing. I wanted to be like Stephen Curry and, you know, LeBron. And I was like, I literally wore basketball shoes to school every day just so I could get up some shots on the court. And my whole thing is like, okay, yeah, that was a major part of my life, but it wasn't necessarily like escapism and it shouldn't be seen as like a negative connotation because it taught me discipline. It taught me like how to work hard. It taught me that similar to muscle memory and putting up shots, the more I practice something like podcasting, for example, the better you'll get at your responses and something along those lines.
Yeah, I think maybe I did use it depends, right? I feel like there are many things that I see that you see in media that is kind of very exaggerative. That's why, and it's not really realistic to what you see in real life. Like you can see all sparkles and rainbows and like beautiful people every single day in your life, and they won't always be nice. Yeah. So like these kind of aspects that you see in the K-pop music industry, like along with the way that the image that these celebrities uphold and just the way that the things that they talk about, there's only like a small percentage of what you see in the world. And then, so I guess like, and even the music itself, like they would have messages that are very relatable to the audience. And I think that's what captivates them to keep on listening. It's catchy. And it also has a really cool message, usually on the lyrics, some of them. and so I guess like, that's why I think it is a form of, now that I look back into it, it is a form of escapism in a way.
Got it. So basically, you know, it was like you started out and it was kind of like cynical and then you kind of changed your perception, trying to mold it after, you know, one of your interests that you were genuinely interested in. And then I think it's like almost like a wave, like it went low, it went high, and then you kind of found a balance.
Yeah, I would say there were a lot of extremes in my life where I was also very low in confidence too. I think especially between middle school and high school, I always hold a lot of pain from things that I've dealt with in terms of like events, even back when I was a kid. It's just in my heart that like, oh, these mean things that people said to me, like I was fat and I was this and this, like I really took all those criticism in. And I would always carry it with me even until, you know, when I have my highs, right? Which is really bad. I think it's really hard to like fight off against those kind of comments that you've dealt with at a younger age and try to be proud. Like sometimes it's hard to say like, oh, wow, like I overcame this. It's just really hard for me, I think, to overall, like you have to fight with it in a way.
Yeah, you have to confront it eventually, but it can't be like, you can't be trying to make it a focal point of your life, like center your life around it, you know, because I feel like, you know, sometimes, and I think this isn't just an Asian culture thing, but I think it's an entire generational thing when I really look back at the aspect of it. But, you know, we probably had issues with mental health in the past, because mm-hmm. you can't tell me that if you're bullied as a kid that you aren't going to come out with problems. I mean, mm-hmm. it takes very mm-hmm. headstrong people to do that, and I give them props. But most people who get bullied as a kid, they generally feel feelings of self-deprecation mm-hmm. and depression and worthlessness and hopelessness and sadness. And I think it's just kind of one of those things where now it's being exposed, like, hey, we should talk about it a little mm-hmm. more instead of just mm-hmm. like, let's bottle it up and move on to the next stage of life, you know?
Yeah, that's something I am super proud of, is that this generation is a little bit more self-aware about their mental health and like the kind of thoughts that we should kind of carefully like assess and just like think about a little bit more, instead of just pretending to like say that everything is okay and you just got to get through school or got to get through certain things, certain yeah. highlights in your life. And the fact that we have, like, in a way, I think technology has really allowed us to get to where we are with these kind of messages. Like, it can be a bad thing, I think. Like, there are bad sides of technology, but then there's also good sides where we're networking and we're talking to people that have these amazing messages to share to the world. And I think that's what also, I think, led me to, I think, learning about my own mental health, is when I start seeing these kind of messages everywhere, especially when I was in my college, you know, when I was in college around that time, in my like 20s or 18, like late teens, or yeah, when you're transitioning to college.
Yeah.
Then I think, yeah. Then you'd start to think about, like, how can I change my mindset after like reading these things and learning about these things?
Yeah, that's definitely a big one. As we tend to get older, more resources are just naturally going to be available because of technological advancements and stuff like that. But at the same time, I feel like the more, for me personally, the more I learn about history, the more I kind of understand mm-hmm. why there's such a generational shift. Like, mm-hmm. like for me personally, like, I think it's common knowledge, like, hey, you know, the older generation, sometimes they just like bottle stuff and they don't necessarily talk about it, you know, tough guy mentality, especially for like a guy, like a male or head of the household. But I think looking back at it, and I'm like, okay, well, what happened back there? Well, they had different world wars. They were going through the Cold War. They were going through mm-hmm. the Vietnam War, you know. I could definitely see an argument there that, like, their problems, if they were to go through something, it's nothing, like, today, it's nothing compared mm-hmm. to, like, a war back then, and the anxiety and cause from that, if you were fighting in it or whether you were just a bystander. But at the same time, I think there has to be an understanding that, like, technological devices, it's not necessarily the healthiest thing. Like, mm-hmm. they were saying, like, children nowadays, they spend like 8 hours in front of a TV or a cell phone or something like mm-hmm. that. And
I still do it.
Yeah. And it just gives, like, to me, kind of what you were saying earlier, it just kind of gives like a skewed perception of the mm-hmm. world. And I think that's what leads to a lot of mental illness, because when you look at a screen and you say, hey, this person said this on Twitter, this person said this on Facebook, and we're stuck in a pandemic and you can't actually mingle with people outside, you instantly think that's what person is. Like, that is the type of person. And then you start thinking all these weird thoughts and stuff.
Yeah, I think it can be very educational if we have the right positive messages. And there's just so many things that are being put out there in the world that some, especially the younger kids, they would have a harder time to decipher the differences between what they should and shouldn't take in. And that can be an issue too, because now that social media is like almost very accessible to anyone, even with low income to, I think, different income statuses, I feel like it's going to be a lot harder for the parents right now, especially during this generation, to not censor. I don't think censor is like the right word, but more like giving them tips on how to like associate themselves from something that's right and what's wrong. But I still feel like that's still very subjective, based on what the child wants to learn about or take in.
Yeah, and it also depends on the parent too, because every individual's aspect of what's right and what's wrong is different. So there's no right or wrong moral out in the world. I personally think, and I've talked about this before, that our society, we're either just going to continue going on the social media thing of censorship mm-hmm. and possibly creating more issues down the line as time goes on, or two, our society will fix it somehow, or three, which I think is most likely, is that we'll go through some sort of like a social media blackout, as weird as it mm-hmm. sounds, and we'll just have an understanding that, like, look, this thing is cool, but it's not necessarily like the safest thing. Like, let's take a step back and let's figure out what to do. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Well, you still, in this world, we do have people who do that and who do like completely cut off social media, which is, have you ever heard of Amish people?
Oh, I know Amish people. Yeah.
I've seen them in real life, and it's fascinating how you see them not having to exist with technology other than the basics of like electricity usage to cook stuff, you know, the daily routines. And they look very happy on the outside, I think. Their sense of style is a little bit outdated, but they do seem, something that's fascinating to notice is that they live a simple life. They're not as distracted, probably, I assume. And they still have the traditions that they were taught from family. And that was kind of their way of living in life. And it can be a very good thing. And I've also seen people who lived in like cities, like really big cities, like here, like in the Bay Area or like in the US. And then they just decided to cut themselves out of the busy work life with technology and keeping up with everything lifestyle. And they decide to move to a different island like Hawaii and just kind of live their lives there and kind of have a semi-non-busy kind of lifestyle. That's a little bit of values that taken are in between like very conservative Amish families and their traditions and the way they live their life to something that's a little bit more toned down from what we are used to, and especially when you're living in the big cities of in the US. So I think what's more important is having a balance of both. And I'm still kind of struggling with that because I'm trying to emerge myself being a professional and I'm trying to get myself out there. And social media is such a huge thing for those people. If you want to be successful, you have to be in social media. That's kind of like the game right now. But I've been dealing with a lot of burnouts lately because I can't stop myself from wanting to have that hunger, that having that necessity to be engaged in everything that's happening in social media and being part of the conversation and having a presence in social media. It's just that chase for me right now feels like it's necessary, but at the same time, I feel like I've not been very happy either if I think about it. So it's about balance, really, in the end.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've known individuals, like an example would be like Chris McCandless, who he was like a traveler and he just kind of left everything to live in the wild and find like his life mm-hmm. purpose. And it didn't turn out too well for him, unfortunately. God bless his soul. But I do know that there are a certain amount of people who have literally quit social media and just quit their day job just to kind of go out into the wild and live on an island or do something like that. And it's just so much peace, because I feel like naturally as humans, we aren't meant to be interacting with this many people around the world. Like, my podcast is all about expanding our horizons and stuff, but not necessarily in an unhealthy way where it's like you have to listen to all this secondary opinions from everybody. It's just kind of like finding out your own personal purpose and meaning of life. And there's plenty of people who have been able to do it by traveling the world or just kind of moving to an island or something like that. But when you're on social media and you're arguing with people who you don't even know where they mm-hmm, live, it's just mm-hmm. like, it's crazy. And especially like developing content, like with me, at least, developing content get like really tiring. Mm-hmm. I have burnout all the time. And my New Year's resolution for this year was to not burn out as much, because it's just one of those things where it gets really, really exhausting trying to make a difference on the world, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of us, when we do try, and you're the same way, I'm assuming, mm-hmm. where we're both trying to create a difference in the world. And at the end of the day, we got to realize, like, okay, maybe it's kind of like a job application where you put it out there, you see how they bite, just take everything a little more naturally.
Yeah. And I think there's a part of me that's being obsessed with like numbers, and that is how I use those numbers to give me recognition in terms of my impact in people. And so I'm nonstop, like just chasing after, I think, something that can be very unhealthy in the end. It's like kind of like looking for fame in a very weird way for us, for people who want to be makers and influencers in terms of like these kind of the messages that we want to put out there. So essentially, it's still kind of the same thing in the end. And we need to remember why we started doing this. And also, if we want to keep giving to people, there's also like a battery limit for our own. Like you said, the burnouts do happen. And if we're just so low, like we're not going to be able to, there's like an energy that becomes also lower. So it wouldn't be as effective if we're already burned out and there's really no point doing so much for people because it's not going to be as effective. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things where like, I feel like with everything in general, I went through it last year where I wanted to start a business. I wanted to write a book, like, but I want to give my all to everything too. And mm-hmm. if I just pick up too many tasks, I won't have the ability to do that. Like it'll mm-hmm. be all mm-hmm. I analogized it to a Las Vegas buffet where you have a plate and then mm-hmm. you could grab mm-hmm. the stuff you really like, or you could put everything on and you won't be mm-hmm. able to eat stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be so heavy and you're just going to be barely able to finish it, all the food in the buffet and the plate. And then you're just going to have to take it home and like eat it if you're able to.
You can't take it home. You got to bring a backpack or a Ziploc bag or something like that.
That's what a lot of people used to do. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
You made a really good point with the numbers, though. I feel like a lot of us, at least, we try to analogize, or not analogize, but correlate numbers to social status. If we have this many downloads, if we have this many likes, mm-hmm. we're here socially. And with you, how do you differentiate having social status and setting a line between like, okay, this is how much effort I should be putting in to obviously work on my social status and grow it, but at the same time, not disregard your own mental health? Like, what do you do personally?
So it's more like when I feel my energy is like super burnt out and there is like a sense of like autopiloting, and that's different for everyone. Autopiloting can happen when you're just not thinking straight about like things happening around you. You're not in the moment of, say, like your parents or your family members and what they're doing, but instead you're just too focused on one thing that you're working on, which is, you know, whatever you're super like grinding for and have a hunger for to like finish a certain goal. And sometimes that can really just knock out like your overall body and like, I guess, like also your energy levels. Like you wouldn't notice it. You wouldn't have these kind of conversations with people for such a long extended amount of time because you just don't have the energy to follow up with people. You know, when I experience burnout, I don't feel like working out. I don't feel like wanting to go outside. Like I'm just stuck in one position on my computer, for example, or my phone. And that's when I realized like, this is not right. I used to go out all the time. I used to talk to people. I used to like hike and stuff and feel great energetically. There's such a drastic difference. And when that happens, that's when I realize, okay, this is getting a little too much because I'm starting to not know where I can, like not having a balance of like what I can, you know, do and cannot do. So that's when I try to just kind of start stopping myself when that happens and really, I guess, like, it sounds weird, but just don't think about anything, and or maybe think a little bit about like how I'm feeling. Just asking myself, like, hey, like, is this for you? Like, do you have a reason why you keep doing this? And, you know, breathe and just look at things around you and make sure that this is whatever you're doing at the moment is what serves your purpose and your goals in the long term.
Mm-hmm. So you practice like mindfulness and mm-hmm. different practices. So what do you generally do to get into that mentality? Like, do you do breath work or yoga or listen to music?
I think it's more like just being able to have self-talk, and that for many people, it's something that takes a lot of practicing. For me, I started in, I think, high school when I started blogging, for example, and I would know how to be more self-aware of my emotions. Like, if I feel a certain way, I have to give myself that talk, like, why are you feeling this way? And then you start digging really deep into just like breaking things down, like why I'm feeling that way. And this can, I think, for people who are beginners of wanting to learn how to like have that self-talk, it's usually through less distractions, and you have to set yourself like a quiet time. I think yoga also is very useful for these kind of moments when you're just too like all over the place, and you need to like resettle your energy and your presence and just like yourself. And I think also having outlets that allow you to express all those emotions that you are feeling at a certain time. Like for me, it's creative arts and dancing and singing. That allows me to sing out my emotions of sadness or like mad anger. Even sometimes I would just talk into space in my little room and be like, oh, well, I can't stand doing this. Like, why am I feeling this way right now? And it's like self-talk, literally. So these are things that I kind of, you know, do. And also reflecting when I'm taking nature walks, it's like my way of allowing me to talk to myself and also think about having a space of clarity. Really, that's what I do.
That's awesome. I love nature walks. I go on a walk literally an hour every day. I know it sounds kind of useless and it's like, oh, why would you do that? You know, and I try my best just to like listen to music and just be at peace with myself at least an hour a day, because it's like mm-hmm. if somebody's working a traditional work schedule and they follow it like a traditional life 8 hour thing, they have 8 hours of work, 8 hours of recreation, and 8 hours of sleep. And I don't want to spend those 8 hours of recreation just like stressing out and worrying and all that stuff. Like, I think it's so big how you mentioned self-talk too, because the way that I get into that mentality is through self-talk. As we go through trials and tribulations through life, I think our immediate response is to go to our support system and talk to somebody about it, mm-hmm. which I think is good in a lot of situations. Mm-hmm. But at the mm-hmm. end of the day, you can't rely on that advice to get you to the mm-hmm. next stage. Like mm-hmm. you need to rely on yourself. They're only supposed to give you like a baton or a little push off the edge, but you got to go run towards the finish line.
Oh my gosh. I have so much to think about. Like just recently, that's exactly what's been going on. Like I have all this noise that I've been dealing with, and it's hard to decipher what I truly want because I'm starting to take in too much. And I'm like, okay, I'm considering my family's like opinions. I'm considering my friends' opinions of how they see me. But then I also have to assess myself, like, should I follow through with what they want for them? Or is it really for me? And do I see myself like following this through in the long term? Is it one of my long-term goals? That is also very important. So I've been kind of learning that lately.
Yeah, I think it just depends like what you define your life purpose as. And if you're kind of taking a positive step towards that direction or a negative step. Like, for example, sometimes I take on, this is kind of an extreme example, but sometimes it's like I want to shoot like 5 podcast episodes in a week and talk with 5 different people. Mm-hmm. But I know that obviously I could post podcasts and make it like and put in extra work for SEO and mm-hmm. and just push my mm-hmm. podcast to everybody's face. But
yeah,
the goal of the podcast is really to expand horizons to live a healthy and happy lifestyle. And the point of it is really to inspire people to think and be curious, and also just make sure not to, you know, have this work only mentality, like such a career oriented social status, and think about the other circumstances in life. So if I were to go essentially put in all this work towards it and ignore my personal career, ignore my family, ignore my friends, ignore the other circumstances, then I wouldn't even be following my own podcast's mantra. I would just be in my own little bubble. So for me personally, something that's really helped me in terms of whenever I have these moments of just, I need clarity, is actually, maybe it's a little easier for me because I do so much talking over the podcast, but I'll make a video and I'll record myself just talk about like problems that are in my head. And then I'll like look at, I'll watch the video maybe an hour later, and I'll try to put myself in the perspective of if I was a friend listening to that. And most of the time when I rewatch it, I'm like, man, that guy sounds like so whiny, or he's like, I don't understand why he's not looking from this perspective, you know? But it's one of those things where that's how I deal with my self-talk and whenever I have issues with clarity, but everybody's different. Yeah.
Interesting. Most people are very shy of listening to their own recordings, but you're like, no, I'm going to head dive into what I want on my thoughts. And I'm going to like do it in this very creative way, which I think is really cool.
Thank you. Well, I'm just that type of person too. Like I delve it. I love discomfort. I love chaos, as weird as it sounds, because I've grown the most during periods of discomfort and chaos. And an example would be like, I'm extremely afraid of heights. Like I cannot go on roller coasters. If you go to Disneyland and you see the one with the big Mickey Mouse ears that everybody pretty much knows of, like I will not go on that and I'll have major anxiety. But I'm like, I need to get over this fear somehow. So how about I go skydiving? And then I went skydiving. And it was like my way of dealing with issues and discomfort, maybe a little weird compared to other people. But the way I look at it is like, okay, well, I may feel uncomfortable doing this task, like making a video and talking about myself, or being outgoing or pushing myself to the next level, but I know I can do it. So all I need to do is just muster up the courage and bravery to do it.
Interesting. Cool. I think when you talk about risk, it's like your way of doing it is not, like you said, not like hurting yourself, but it's more like just a slight push, not like a super dramatic like discomfort, but it's little steps. And then eventually you'll like see a major difference from like, say, a year ago. And you'd be like, exactly. Wow, like I grew a lot.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, I did grow a lot. And I even though I grew a lot this year, I always recognize that room for growth. And you, I mean, like you've definitely in this past year, you made the most of it. And I'm assuming like, you grew a lot too. And I feel like, if I'm not mistaken, you're a biology student. That's like your main focus and area of study, correct?
Correct. But I also wanted to just, I have so many different passions. There's like a very creative side of me that I still have not been able to actually explore, especially since when I was a young age, because I think my parents were, and a lot of Asian culture in general, really disregard like those kind of passions as a thing to put your time in. So what? Like I really love singing, for example. Like I wanted to, like when I was a kid, I want to know yours too. I want to know your kids and your kid dreams after mine. When I was a kid, I loved to be I was acting like a princess, like Sailor Moon, for example. She was like my role model. I love to sing, and I want to have this elegant way of like seeing beauty in the world. It's just magical. It has to be magical. That was like my childhood. And I want to like want people to recognize me and like share love in a way. So yeah. And dancing. So those two things are kind of, and drawing, and oh, so many different passions when I was a kid. What about you?
Yeah, I think with me, mine's was, well, I played a lot of video games as a kid, actually. I was a big gamer, and I also did a little martial arts here and there. So I was like very focused on, I guess not necessarily aggressive, but I was just like, oh, I'm going to be like this action character. And then time progressed and I got really into basketball. Like that was my thing. Actually, I did jujitsu for a while and I sacrificed jujitsu to do basketball just completely. And it was one of those things where I wore basketball shoes to school every day in middle school, and I thought I was going to be a good basketball player. Mm-hmm. And my growth spurt isn't necessarily that good at all, but it was very good in middle school where I grew. I was taller than most of the people. Mm-hmm. And then I went into high school and I instantly, I'm not sure how familiar you are with basketball terminology, mm-hmm. but I played like the biggest position because I was one of the taller kids at my school.
Nice. And
when I went into high school, I instantly went into the smallest position because it was a different school. I went to a private school, and transitioning to a public where a lot more mm-hmm. people just play basketball there, I was like, mm-hmm. oh man, I'm short, and I got nervous and stuff. But I think there's a point to what you were saying and what I was saying is that it's okay to be like passionate about something that you're creative about. Like, I think everybody should have a creative outlet, and I don't want to hear like, oh yeah, my creative outlet is like my business. Like, no, that's not like a real thing. You know, it's just another job, and I don't mm-hmm. want to be that person.
Yeah. Like marketing, marketing can be enjoyable, but it's not like your whole like life, you know,
yeah.
legacy
you know, I, and all that. I know some people who they do it and they're totally passionate about it, and like props to them. But like the way I look at it is like, okay, well, you may be like grinding like crazy now, but what happens when you have a family? What happens when mm-hmm. you have a family to take care of? If you're going to take care of your parents later on in life, like, are you going to sacrifice your business, or are you going to, what if I just want to sing in my room? I could do that mm-hmm. whether I have kids or whether I don't.
Yeah. So. Yes. It's weird how when I repressed like certain passions, like creative outlets, for example, my body reacts in the most sensitive, triggering way. Like, for example, if I haven't sang in a while because I'm just like, I don't have time to sing, I'm like too busy working on school and studying, there was a point where my body, once I sang, just out of stress or something, for some reason, my body would react in a way where like I start tearing up after singing. And that's like a sign for my body and my emotional mind that this is something you got to have in your daily routine or weekly routine to stay sane mentally. And that's when I realized like I got to like have to maintain that creative passion and all these things that I loved when I was a kid, even until now, even if we're supposed to be responsible and move on with life and have all these amazing goals and become successful, it's still a part of us, you know?
Yeah. And put some quotation marks next to that too. I mean, that success is really, it's not necessarily all about social status. A lot of it is having a creative outlet and being able to juggle your level of happiness with that too. And I feel like that's a lot of your mission just in general, whenever you're doing your podcast or even this Calm On app, where you're just trying to pass on to the younger generation, like, look, it is okay to have a creative outlet. It's okay to kind of just focus on your mental health and your sanity as opposed to trying to get straight A's or watch Twitter. Like, how are you able to kind of just juggle that balance between everything? I'm just kind of curious.
I think I'm still balancing it right now. I don't think I got it together yet with that balance. I think it's more like the memories that you have with people and like remembering like the tough times whenever you're dealing with burnouts or when you're having a tough time in your life. What do you remember? Usually you remember of the relationships you had with people between these things. Like, say in my project, for example, I've met so many cool people who are so passionate about the same thing I'm doing, who are even volunteering out of their time, right? And I also remember about like people or role models that I've had conversations with. These memories will then remind me like why I actually did it. What is the purpose of doing all these things, right? It's not about fame, like you said. It's about these causes that I value. And you know, here's another thing I want to add. I know that one of the core values that I have as like, I've envisioned my deathbed in a way that's very positive. And whenever I think about it, I get very emotional And I want to see myself in a way that I've passed on these really good values to people. I've taught people these things about life and perspectives. I want to be a role model for many, many people that may not know me at the beginning, but after seeing my work, they're like, wow, like I can see life in a more beautiful way. And they are more, they grow out of it after seeing my work, such as my podcast, such as like taking care of your mental health and the app and having these families being to bond together with their children after using my app. That is whatever work I do. I hope that by the end of my deathbed, I have been surrounded by a lot of people, including a great amount of extended family members, like grandchildren, and they're kind of overlooking me and they're saying, well, like without you, you know, my life would have been a lot harder, and like you made me smile and things like that. Those are the kind of things I want to leave off as I leave the world. I know my legacy. This is what I want to do in life. And so that's what I'm going to continue to do. Right. And I hope you have a legacy similar to that too.
Yeah. First of all, I mean, I think that that's a very like just mature and growth oriented way of just thinking of like this life. Like it sounds like one, I not only want to give back in the present where it's like, there's so many people who are willing to help on this application that you're working on to help other people just out of the purity of their hearts. But at the same time, you want to be the one at the end of the day to possibly like make an impact on somebody's life. Like for me personally, I found a lot of fulfillment in helping others. Helping others has just naturally helped myself and my own maturity and my own growth as a person. So that's just always been like a really big thing in my book. And I think personally, at the end of the day, whenever I go through struggles or whenever I'm trying to juggle a bunch of things, one thing I have is I have like a screenshot of messages, mm-hmm. just of people who have messaged me about the podcast saying like, oh, you inspired me to start one. Oh, I'm really gracious. Mm-hmm. I don't screenshot my metrics. I don't care if I got mm-hmm. however many views on this episode. I care about making an impact on somebody's mm-hmm. life. And I'm just very fortunate to be in the position I'm in to even be mm-hmm. able to make an impact, yeah. you know, be able to shoot a podcast. There's people in third world countries that don't even have access to internet. So yeah. I'm very fortunate, and I feel like we should all try to make the most of life, you know? So I think that's just like a great overarching message of this episode. And I was wondering, in lieu of that message, what are some of your goals for 2021? What are some of the things that you want to accomplish?
I hope that in 2021, I'll have a balanced, less burnout, like you said. That's definitely a big goal of mine. Of course, I want to give more to the world, but there's also that internal happiness that I've had last year while trying to balance everything. But I think the beginning of the year, I did not have that balanced out again. So it's about resetting myself in that way. About my happiness, and then definitely trying new hobbies, getting out of my comfort zone in a way like you, being risk averse and just seeing like how I can learn out of it, just finding that learning mindset. So I might, like, I've always wanted to do Taekwondo or something like in martial arts. Like I've always fascinated by like Hong Kong, like action people and movies like Donnie Yen. He's a huge role model of mine.
Oh yeah. He was an Ip Man, right?
Yes, that was him.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, there's an art behind that too in martial arts. And I want to, like, I'm scared of like sparring and like confronting people with like physical fights and things in training. Yeah.
There's a mutual understanding. As somebody who's done martial arts before, and I also did jiu-jitsu, I feel like one, it teaches you discipline. Mm-hmm. Two, it teaches you self-defense. If you ever get in a case or a situation where you have to use it, knock on wood. But third of all, there's like a mutual understanding to where it there's camaraderie and a community to where, you know, when you spar, there's not going to be somebody who's trying to kick your head off and knock you out. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's more of a mentoring aspect. And that I honestly want to go back and work on my martial arts skills and stuff like that, or mixed martial arts skills, because it's such a beautiful thing. It helps you get in shape. Like there's an endless amount of benefits. And I think sometimes people just worry that they're going to get knocked out, but that's not the case.
I feel like that's just my fear and insecurity talking to me. The comfort zone, like you said, is like, it's like, I don't think that's a good idea. You want to get hurt. And it's like, well, you actually learn a lot out of it. I think it's good to talk to you about it after this.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'll give you some suggestions and stuff. But hey, I appreciate you coming on. I really enjoyed just hearing about your goals, what you're doing with Calm On, and really just your mentality behind it. You know, sometimes when we have these types of podcasts, people try to keep asking too much about the product as opposed to the person who created the product. So I'm glad I got to know a little bit more about you. For everybody who happens to be listening, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you guys happen to enjoy Angela as a guest or enjoy what we're talking about in general, please feel free to leave a rating or review. Really, really helps me. It showcases the podcast a little more on Apple Podcasts or whoever's searching for it. So I appreciate it in advance. And also, if you guys have some free time, want to listen to a couple more podcast episodes, feel free to subscribe. You could subscribe via the podcast medium you're listening to right now, or you could visit unmutedgenerations.com where you could look at each category, pick out the podcast episode you desire. There's plenty of episodes out there. But other than that, hope you all have a great rest of your day. I'll see you guys later.